Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education.
For Tara Raleigh, the treatment was the easy part.
Treatment was the easiest part of the journey. Like, I knew my job. There were experts telling me my job was to show up, have a good attitude, fight hard, right? Eat well, and be present.
Diagnosed with small cell neuroendocrine cervical cancer, a rare and aggressive cancer at 37, Tara was initially shocked, but then jumped right into planning mode. She rallied her family for support, figured out the most appropriate way to explain the situation to her teenage daughter, and even managed to continue her job as a San Francisco school superintendent, all while undergoing cancer treatment. After undergoing cancer treatment at MD Anderson, which included chemotherapy and radiation, Tara was officially declared cancer-free in July 2020, 5 months after her initial diagnosis. While Tara's family was relieved and ready to move on, Tara was unable to join them. Fears of cancer recurrence plagued her, and she found herself taking long walks and writing down these thoughts, which she dubbed the white noise of survivorship, an attempt to give them less power over her mindset. Realizing that these long messages could help communicate her feelings of anxiety to her family and help other survivors in similar situations, Tara decided to articulate them into a book, The White Noise of Survivorship and Other Unsolicited Lessons I Learned from Cancer. In today's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Tara shares the unexpected upsides of undergoing cancer treatment during the COVID-19 pandemic, why she chose to not initially go public with her diagnosis.
It was really important to me that cancer doesn't get, it wasn't going to hijack what we had. I mean, everybody dies, so cool. We had more information, but it sort of felt like if you allow it to become the headline, then it takes your story.
How writing her book helped process her fears of cancer recurrence. And more.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about you? Where do you live? What do you do?
Sure. So my name is Tara Raleigh. I live in the Bay Area in California. I am a mom to a now 15 and a half year old, and I work in the field of education.
And then can you tell us a little bit about your cancer journey?
Sure. So in February of 2020, I started having some ignorable symptoms, really, in late January, early February. And so I promptly ignored them. And then they escalated pretty quickly. And so within a handful of weeks, it was a handful of appointments. And then each appointment started somewhat similarly. I was 37, super healthy. I'd go into each appointment and there was a lot of, sure, it's fine. It's probably nothing. And then they'd start taking a look. And then you could hear I could hear the hedging in each appointment. And it felt like each appointment built on the next. So started with enthusiasm and optimism. And shortly, I could feel the change in the room. Moved quickly, because obviously what they were seeing was concerning, and small cell neuroendocrine cervical cancer was the diagnosis.
And can you tell us a little bit about how you felt when you got that diagnosis?
I mean, I think at first the diagnosis, it was very surprising. I mean, I think in the back of my mind, I probably knew something wasn't right because of the symptoms that I was having, but it seemed so improbable that I could be hitting Orange Theory in the morning and then getting a cancer diagnosis in the afternoon that I think it was just, it felt very surreal that I got the call on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, which in our household is a really special, my daughter's, I adopted her. And so we take advantage of every holiday to make it really special. Valentine's is a family holiday. We make a big lasagna dinner and we write each other love notes. And I got the call while the lasagna was in the oven. So the whole experience was surreal. And then the diagnosis, you only have to Google it to know that cancer is never great news. And my particular type was had a really, really poor outcome.
I actually finished reading your book this morning. Very well written. And I remember that part really gripped me about how you were standing in the kitchen, getting that lasagna and ready for that lovely Valentine's Day tradition you have with your daughter. I remember you saying something about how you had to hold it together for your daughter. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about that?
I mean, I think as a mom, the worst nightmare you could possibly have coming true, right? You do everything you can to make your child's life free of worry and anything frightening. You work very hard to make these moments magical. And it was surreal that in this moment that so much effort for so many years had gone into doing it a particular way, right? Like the same lasagna recipe, the same candles, the same little cutout hearts that we put on the table. And then this unbelievable call and not wanting to allow the diagnosis to hijack the memory, concurrent with this experience of overwhelm of like, what if this is the last time we can have this moment in this way, was really challenging. But I remember being really proud of myself when she cuddled up into bed, that it was undetectable that anything was wrong. I snuck out to the driveway, called my mom, cried it out. And then, right, what you do as a parent, you pull it together, you get in there. And I figured, you know, whether this is one of many more to come or the last one, we're going to make sure it's really special and that she has the memory preserved from what cancer might bring in the future.
When did you tell her? How did you approach it?
It felt really important to me that I not share it with her until I could share a plan at the same time. So I waited until after the follow-up scans, because depending on the staging, we were going to have a very different kind of conversation, right? And so I needed to know what we were talking about. Were we talking about making it the greatest whatever we had left? Or were we talking about, hey, it's going to get rough while mommy's fighting, but I'm fighting hard. So I waited. Once I knew that the doctor was on board for treating to cure, then I took her on a walk in one of our favorite spots and just sort of said, hey, look, here's the deal. Here's the plan. And here's what I can promise. I can promise that I'm going to show up every day of treatment at 100% and fight really hard so that this is just a moment that we both learn from and grow through, and small chapter in a much bigger story.
How would you say that your relationship with your daughter changed, or was it impacted at all throughout this cancer journey? Did you feel like you were able to support each other? Did you feel like you became closer? Did you feel like there was some ups and downs?
Great question. Well, first of all, I'm incredibly blessed because I'm part of a big family and everybody rallied. She made a comment at one point in the middle of one of the harder times during treatment. She was like, Mom, you still helicopter more now than other people's parents do when they're well. I'm not entirely sure she meant that as a compliment, but I really felt it like from my side of the sky, right? I'm like, that's the greatest compliment you could have played. Although I'm not sure you intended that way. Like, I'm so glad this sick, you still feel like I'm showing up. I would say that more or less, it was such a strange time anyway, because it was COVID. So she was home doing distance learning. I was working remote. It was all so dystopian that I think in some ways it all got sort of wrapped up in the noise of the pandemic for her. And I don't know that she would say that it felt particularly different, except we played a lot more. That version of play for me probably looked a little more tired, but then I had my family. So on the days I felt the worst, you know, the busyness, the joy never changed. And then we went out a lot. So we went on hikes, like I'd finish chemo and I would put on my shoes and we'd go take an adventure hike because I wanted her memories to be full. It was an uncertain time. I wasn't sure what it was going to look like on the other side of treatment. And if my time in treatment was going to end up being the time that we had together, I wanted to try to fill it with as many positive memories as I could and shield her from as many of the more unpleasant moments as I could as well. It was really important to me that it wasn't going to hijack what we had. I mean, everybody dies. So cool. We had more information, but it sort of felt like if you allow it to become the headline, then it takes your story. And so we actually didn't talk about it very much. I didn't hide it from her. She knew if I was feeling sick, it was chemo or radiation, but that needed to be the footnote on the life that we were living because everyone goes through hard things. And this was just the hard thing we were going through. I tried to really keep that in the background of like, it's a reality. It's part of what we're experiencing, but it is by no means going to be able to dictate the way we live together, however long or short that may end up being.
You mentioned that diagnosed right before COVID came, and then you're undergoing treatment during all that. So did you feel like that helped your cancer journey, or do you feel like it was made that you feel more isolated?
Probably both. Yeah. I mean, I think for my personality, right? Like I cried the day I was diagnosed and then that was that. On we go. We got to make a plan because like, I think I say in my book, like it's okay to cry or scream, but set a timer because wallowing is not a survival strategy. So that is sort of my approach. Again, not prescriptive, works for me, but I wanted to just get through it. And part of that for me was going to be keeping my job and not being compassioned into oblivion, where that idea of like, just take care of yourself. Like, oh, don't worry about this project. Don't worry about that call. Like, just take care of your health. For some could be like super helpful. For me, like, I needed to be living in the land of the living if I was going to fight to be living. Do you know what I mean? Like, I needed those phone calls. I needed those work meetings. And I think if I had been showing up in person without the Zoom filter, I'm not sure anyone would have bought I was as well as I seemed if I had been present in person. So I think from a work perspective, it gave me incredible cover to show up and be present in a way I'm not sure I would have been able to pull off, frankly, if we had been in person. The other side of that is, I think the fear level of the pandemic, there was so much unknown in March, April, May, June 2020, plus cancer, which was a really new experience. We were Cloroxing groceries, got so strange. And I wonder how would it have been different if there hadn't been that extra layer of excruciating fear.
In the book, you wrote about how you made that decision to keep your cancer diagnosis to only your family, and you didn't tell anybody at work what was going on, and because you felt like people didn't take you seriously when they thought that you had cancer and that people took away some of your autonomy. So can you speak a little bit about that decision and how you feel like maybe people who don't have cancer but have loved ones or have people in their life who would have cancer, can you give maybe them any advice on how to approach people who have cancer with empathy without making them feel the way you felt?
Yeah, I mean, I hope I have some advice to offer there. Although again, I mean, I know everyone is different. And for some people, that feeling, that swell of support from their community is critical. And I take nothing away from that experience. For me,
you also mentioned how you had a family, right? So for you, you had that support from your family. Other people might not have the luxury of having that.
That's exactly right. I already had an amazing network of people, and I just happened to be incredibly private. Out of the gates, it would have been uncomfortable for me to share anything that was going on, but then add to that the layer of feeling like I was slipping. You know, people weren't sure I would be dependable because they weren't sure I would be there. And I think with this particular diagnosis, it was particularly complicated because I knew if I shared my diagnosis, anyone who Googled it would be starting to take projects right on off my desk. Like, I mean, what are the chances she's going to be here in 6 months to finish that project? And I really, that to me just felt horrifying and upsetting. My boss knew, my immediate team that I work with knew, right? I mean, the people who needed to know, I shared with, I just didn't think, especially in the context of a pandemic, for me, it wasn't going to be helpful because I have a job that I love. And maybe there's a bit of advice in that. I love going to work. I do what I love. I choose to do what I do. It's a choice. It's a vocation more than it is a job or a career. Losing that would have been incredibly painful. So I think maybe in the context of if you love what you do, then it's important to continue doing it, right? And to be able to do it well. It's important to me to be part of the team that's solving problems, that's showing up to the table and getting in there and really working. And I didn't want to be excused from that experience out of compassion. It only ever would have been coming from a great place, but it would have been excusing me from the discussion nonetheless. Advice for people who are around someone going through it. I think maybe it's just really trying to be, well, it's wonderful to be thoughtful and compassionate if the person with cancer feels that they can, unless it's obvious that perhaps they really cannot and they need that reality check. I think allowing the person going through it to decide to what extent they choose to remain engaged in their world, I think let them be the driver in that. I think the intent to be compassionate by reducing them to just a cancer patient from the cancer patient's experience, it minimizes you just to a diagnosis. And that doesn't motivate me. That wasn't going to motivate me to fight.
Can you just tell me, just to give the audience a timeline, when were you diagnosed as no evidence free of disease?
So that came in June of 2020. So with this particular
4 month period.
Yeah. So with this particular cancer, it's concurrent. It's chemo radiation. It's all concurrent. So 6 rounds of chemo, 30 rounds of external beam radiation, 3 brachytherapies, which is internal. All of that is overlapped to give you the best possible chance. Some women are eligible for surgery, which shifts that timeline. My tumor was too big. So I was not within the recommended protocol for a hysterectomy. They went straight to chemo radiation. So it was a lot, but again, silver lining, it was pretty efficient. So by June, I finished treatment. In July of 2020, I had my first scan, and that's where they declared me no evidence of disease.
During the book and like during this conversation, you're mentioning a lot about the mental toll that the cancer treatment, but also even more during your survivorship, the mental toll, the fear of cancer recurrence was taking on you. Do you have any thoughts on mental health and cancer, what you wish people know about it? So any strategies that you use to cope with that fear of cancer recurrence? And again, any advice you might give for other people who are no evidence free of disease, but still have that fear inside them of cancer recurrence?
I actually think treatment was the easiest part of the journey. Like, I knew my job. There were experts telling me what the right thing to do was. My job was to show up, have a good attitude, fight hard, right? Eat well and be present. And I was able to put an overlay on that of like, treat the people who were helping with grace and joy and positivity, right? Like, say good morning, remember to engage with them positively because they're just there trying to help and were incredibly helpful. Then treatment ends and you're sort of left in this very uncomfortable space of there's no evidence of disease now. There might not ever be again. It also could come back tomorrow. And so you're either going to be here for a moment longer or an entire lifetime, and we won't really know until we know. So it's a very uncomfortable space to live in. I think sometimes, for me, I can say that I also was swelled with family and support during treatment. And that support didn't change after treatment, but their relationship to the crisis of cancer did, and mine did not. So the crisis was over, the cancer was gone, and they could breathe and return to loving me as hard as they've ever loved me, but also it starting to go back to normal. But I didn't feel like life was really going back to normal. It was turning into something different. And that noise of survivorship has for me been the most challenging part of the whole experience. Trying to mitigate that relationship between every special moment is either another wonderful special moment or a last special moment. And I am not naive to that thought, right? That is in the back of my mind. And every time, are we decorating for Halloween the way we always have because we always do and we always will? Or is it going to be the last time that we do it? And what is the pressure then to make it a particularly special memory? So I think that noise for me is real. It doesn't make my life less joyful or less wonderful. It does make my life slightly more complicated in terms of trying to really manage that noise. Just be gentle with myself in understanding that it's real and be strict with myself in understanding that it doesn't get to dictate the way I move forward and live and interact with people.
You mentioned earlier that you're a very private person. You say that in the book as well. So then what makes somebody who's so private that they didn't really tell many people about their cancer diagnosis to then decide to publicly write a book about their story? When did you decide to write this book? What was the process of writing the book? And what do you hope that readers would get out of your book?
The writing of the book was actually, I was writing it for me because I was struggling sometimes more than other times. There's this amazing trail. It's like a 6-mile loop by our house. And when my daughter is at her Saturday dance classes, which are long enough to take this kind of wander by myself, I would walk every Saturday. And in those Saturday hikes, my brain would just kind of wander because there's no service. So there was no other input. It was just me alone with my thoughts, which was horrifying, but also really interesting because I would have these thoughts that in the moment felt helpful to me, cathartic. And so I started texting myself my thoughts so that if I had that feeling again, I could go back to it. Right? Like naming the noise. I remember thinking that's actually really helpful for me to remember when this happens again, this worry happens again, that I'm going to call it the noise and I'm going to remind it that it has a place, but it doesn't get to fill my whole mind, right? Like it doesn't get all the space. It can have some. And so I would just text myself these thoughts. So really the book is actually just the stringing together with some cohesion of the text that I sent myself over probably a 6 to 8 month time period. And initially when I was going to put it into it, like a PDF form for me, again, just to sort of have, because some days are more challenging than others. I was reading it back over and I thought, gosh, I just wonder if anyone else feels this way or would benefit from this. I am part of and have been part of a private online group for other women who have had a small cell or large cell cervical cancer diagnosis, which is a very small and amazing group of women. Their sharing online helped me so much that it made me feel like maybe the right thing to do was to share it. And if it was helpful, great. And if it wasn't, that's okay. it wasn't born to be anything more than useful to me and then anyone else who it might be useful to. So, I mean, it really was that it was that organic and that uncomfortable for a private person to share, but maybe that's part of the gift that was supposed to come out of this experience. So I think sharing is one of the greatest gifts that we can offer. For me, it's challenging just because, you know, I am private, but I also think what if it helps? And I know from my family, who of course read it because they love me, and whether it was terrible or wonderful, they were going to read it anyway. And it even changed our relationship a little bit. It helped them maybe to know the noise that I was still dealing with in a way that I probably wouldn't have ever articulated to them, because it's selfish and unnecessary, right? To be like, hey, I know we're at dinner, but like, oh, I've got a lot of noise about my cancer right now. Like, you just don't.
I don't think,
you know,
it's selfish. But I understand what you're saying, that you feel like you don't want to, they've already been so supportive that you don't want to give them more.
So it became a mechanism for a whole nother layer, I think, of communication and understanding. So even from that perspective, if another loved one or friend or whomever, if it can help us to understand our own experience and help others to understand that experience as well, then I think that's valuable.
Say that this book strengthened your relationship with your family. Has it helped filter out some of that white noise of survivorship, as you say?
Oh, it's definitely, from a processing perspective, it has helped me enormously. Things that are like, for example, I know I talk in the book about the experience of going to Costco, because it's like wildly overwhelming. For me, it was wildly overwhelming because I love.
You want to share that Costco part? Because I think our audience would find it very relatable.
So shortly after treatment, Costco is one of my favorite places. And we were there and I had this sort of crippling experience because we've always bought paper towels and toilet paper and, you know, hummus, whatever, in bulk. Even though we're a household of two, because it's just very comforting to have all those paper towels in the hall closet. And for the first time, when I was reaching for the paper towels, I had this like very sinking feeling of like, if indeed I'm around for a long time, this is a very economical buy and I'm delighted by it. But if I'm not, I suddenly had this vision of like me gone and my family just like emptying out roll after roll of paper towel from the hall closet. And it wasn't funny. It was really, really sad and it hurt. And it gave me pause because I suddenly felt completely emotionally unable to decide whether or not I should be bulk buying paper towels. And it sounds trivial and ridiculous, but to me in that moment, it didn't feel that way at all. It actually felt very heavy and very sad. And if I couldn't figure out whether or not to bulk buy paper towels, imagine the other things that I was struggling to do. And so I wrote about that in the book. At the time of writing it, it wasn't funny to me at all. It was actually really, it was very heavy. Now, having read it and kind of processed it through, I actually think that's quite comical because whatever, they're paper towels. But the book helped
me. Paper towels in that moment.
Exactly. But I think writing the book and even rereading it, parts of it to myself when I'm needing that, it has helped lighten the experience because I can sort of step back and have a little more perspective on some of those pieces that in the moment felt so substantial and so burdensome. You know, when you read them back time after time, it really helps you to sort of process and recalibrate.
What would you say has like motivated you throughout all this process of going through the cancer journey, then navigating survivorship and writing this book?
Family and faith. I never lost sight of how blessed I was to have the family I have in the first place. They're more than I ever could have deserved and everything I ever could have needed. You know, when you're loved that well and that way, it's hard not to love that way and show up in that same level of intensity and faith. I mean, I think I never felt alone. I always felt hopeful and joyful and committed to being the best I could for them and for myself and for the life that I've been blessed to have for however long I was going to have it.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcast. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter @cure_magazine or at Facebook @curemagazine.